Welcome to Baltic Landlords, an international broadcast about real estate development, property management, and income sustainability. I'm your host, David Svet, and my guest today is Janis Ozols, partner at Colliers International and member of Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors since 2013. Jani, welcome to Baltic Landlords.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Today's main topic is real estate development. Jani, walk me through the process of turning an empty land plot into an A-class office building in Riga Town.
All right, that's kind of a broad question. We have people, you know, who are busy with this question for over years. So I'm probably not the expert actually in the process itself, you know, the technicalities of it. But what I comment on is probably the few steps where I am involved in. So basically that's let's say the very start of it, when it's the concept creation, and then we help our clients developing the concept, market analysis, feasibility studies, that sort of thing, moving forward evaluations. Then again, it's my colleagues from Colliers and other companies who do all the technical work, the architects and the project managers, and then eventually at the end of the cycle, we are also happy to take over management and exit sale of the property. So not sure if that answers the question, but it
does. And is it possible to theoretically make a valuation for a concept project, or does it have to be built and then the valuers can step into the work?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is how things happen in real life. You know, a land does have a value, obviously, and the question is just what you do about it. And what you do is basically you create a concept and the concept adds value, and then you go sort of to the brick and mortar stage. So from my perspective, it is so that the more of planning and the more of a detailed concept and the more it's sort of backed by research data and actually good reasoning behind it, the more value there is in the real estate actually. And that in principle just means that the owner has an asset of a higher value.
So basically, if I were to be a real estate developer, I can make like three or five different projects for one land plot and then analyze which of those is the most profitable.
Exactly. This is what we call highest and best use studies. And what we do for our clients is they come with a, like, the situations are different. Obviously, normally they have sort of a background idea or a general idea behind them how they have actually got to this land. But obviously, there are also cases when the clients come with a blank page, you know, and then you simply suggest them what to do. But in either way, you know, if we speak about the landlord himself or any third party who would look into this project, he would obviously need to have the comfort that all possible opportunities or alternatives have been considered, and you have taken the most lucrative one. So this is how we do those highest and best use studies. So take an empty land plot, you look at what can be built there according to building regulation, and then again you take in the market context, what is demanded by the market in this very particular place, what can be the development horizon so that you so that the market can actually absorb what you have built there, what are your own capabilities at the end of the day. So all these things you can put in Excel.
Yeah, and does the architectural side impact the outcome in terms of valuation? So for example, you've decided that this land plot is particularly good for commercial use, and you understand that the maximum story capacity is, let's say, seven floors, do you go to different architects to see which provides you the best planning and the best concept for the house, or?
Absolutely, it's basically it's a collaboration work. In the ideal case, it's a collaboration. So you work side by side with the architect. So what the architect can tell you, and this is where we consultants are not the experts at, is what functions and what layouts, let's say, you can actually put on the land plot. Yeah. So the initial idea, usually, you know, you iterate towards some kind of result, and so the very early basic result, or not the result, but the basic material that comes from an architect is basically he tells you, all right, this is the site, and here you can build, you know, this many blocks with that many square meters, and with these functions. And it's a question how do you mix those functions in the most successful way. And in the process, it's so that you take this early drawing or this early sketch. Based on that, you develop some kind of market context, analyzing the alternatives, and then you put forward some kind of best suitable mixes, and that is then again when the landlord or the developer goes back to the architect and says, you know, listen, mate, you this is all nice, you know, but let's make it more into market context, and yeah. And then let's say this function needs to be more and situated in that part, and the other one, you know, we're going to make it that way.
Okay. And is there any difference between commercial and residential real estate development processes, like the ones you mentioned?
Well, except that the terminal user is different, you know, yeah, of course. Obviously, and how you sell the product. But generally, I would say that it's not that visible, I think, in Riga yet, but where the world is turning, if you look at a more global perspective, is actually that you do not differentiate like internally a residential or entirely commercial. So what you want to do is make it the maximum mix of functions, and that is again the reasoning being that you simply differentiate your risks. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So so that is why you want to do residential resi next to offices, just because then this block will not be empty after 6 o'clock in the morning in the afternoon. So
I think Z Towers is a great example of it.
Yes, they're working towards it, but the most successful for the moment we can look in Riga, I would say, is Jauna Teika. Yeah, so which I recall back the 2007 2009 was basically a couple of new buildings and an empty field, but now you have a vibrant community there. Yeah. and that's a landmark location.
Of course, and there are still some development opportunities around it, like the Gustav's building that are planned to be launched next year, the year after the next one. And behind Elkhorst, there is a huge land plot with abandoned buildings that I think can be transformed in the
future. It will be, and it will be, time. Yes.
Like I remember 2 months ago, I was walking through that space and I was thinking, wow, like there are so many square meters and possibilities in here.
Yeah, but this is exactly the effect that it all started with one office building and two residential buildings, and the guys behind Hanner just had the vision, you know, and they drew together folks from this neighborhood. They created this association, and they started branding that location. And eventually, you know, it was not about only the very particular property or the very particular project. It's now, if you if you know Iona Tekino and you know WeFresh.
Yeah.
So that's again how you add value to a whole district.
Yeah, true. And how many involved parties are there to launch a real estate development project?
Who?
So I believe architect, constructor, you know, the sellers, that's one part, but I think there are many layers below the iceberg that you don't see from public side.
No, I mean, yeah, surely. I mean, there's usually like, there's usually behind the owners, there's usually investors to whom you pitch the idea. There's the banks who give you money. There's a whole lot of consultants along the way. So, yeah.
Okay, and so yeah, like what would I need on my team if I were to cover a full cycle of residential development project on in Latvia, or commercial project if they differ in the concept of team itself? So I believe I can't take a bank on my team. I can collaborate with them, but what industry experts do I need on my team to cover the full cycle, starting from the sketch to building to management, even at the end?
Well, if you look at the current practice now, I would say so that there are actually only a few developers who try to manage it all the process in house, and that's not let's say I would doubt about taking into account the account of Riga, like size wise and what the developments are in size, you know, you cannot really, it's not effective to manage all the to have the all the team in house. So that's why you outsource, and that's why for every function, not for every, let's say, but for most of the functions, you would seek for the most dedicated professional in the market. Mm. So this would apply to all things. So if you want to work with an architect, you make a competition for the architect and then you choose the best one. So yeah. If you want a construction project management service, then again you look out and weigh the alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the formula.
So basically, in almost every project that you help investors make, you make some sort of competition for, let's say, 3, 5, or 10 architects, and the one who has the best design that is taken on board.
Yeah, I'm not speaking, you know, I'm here and not speaking for the developers. We are we as Colliers are on the consultant side. Yeah. So what we try to do is, like I said before, we try to cover as much as possible the whole cycle. So from finding the land plot to basically in a few years' time exiting the project possibly, yeah, as a cash flow property. So so in that sense, yeah, we have different teams, and those teams provide the respective services, and we then again, you know, have our trusted partners who we like to work with and who we probably also suggest usually.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And do you, the Latvian office, for example, do you work only with the Latvian developments, or does it happen sometimes that your colleagues from other countries take you on board for some bigger projects that they need help with, or how does that happen?
Well, we are lucky to be, you know, a global company. So yeah, we have offices in like 60 plus countries, and at this point, this collaboration between the offices is a really good and beneficial feature for us. I would say that we're not that much exporters of knowledge and know-how as we are importers.
Mm.
So the great thing is really that we can relatively easily access through our network the knowledge that is not present here. So it's a very common practice that we collaborate with colleagues from UK, from Poland. So, for instance, the retail sector, you know, Poland is a big market, and in that sense, you know, you cannot surprise those guys with something that's happening here in Riga. But then again, if you look at the trends that were observed and are being observed in those bigger markets like Poland, for instance, we take this as an opportunity, and we've had projects where we simply invite our colleagues to work here. So and I'm happy that the clients appreciate that.
Yeah, I've also heard one developer say that he saw a concept of this these quartals of also mixed use residential and commercial in Krakow, I think, and there on that visit he sparked the idea that hey, in Latvia we don't have those examples and we should start working with
well them. Fortunately, we do have them, but it's only a few examples now. Yeah. So like you said, Z Towers are going that way. Jaunateke is an established location. You take the Vastin project, Lindenholm, and their office building there. So this is a concept that has worked elsewhere, and then we see it also slowly but surely taken over also here.
Yeah. A very important question: in which stage of real estate development are the biggest profit margins hidden? I suppose the construction stage is not the most profitable one in the building, if the building is to be constructed qualitatively, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it depends, you know. If I look from the perspective of how the property value evolves, and that's kind of my speciality, you know, then obviously it's the highest value is when you have actually the project ready and you see that there is demand for it. Either you're selling units or you have leases and the tenants pay your rent, and I think that's the most profitable point, and if you can manage up to that one, I think this is kind of where the current developers are actually going, and this is exactly the case with Hunter and the Jaunateke, because they took it from the start, had it pretty rough through on the way, but then again, you read it yourself, 130 million. Colliers mediated the deal, so they exit happily. That's I think the cycle.
The last quarter has been especially good, active in this market. Okay, and who are the largest real estate developers in Latvian market? As you mentioned, Hunters is definitely on the top. Are there any major players?
Oh, of course. I mean, in Resi. In Resi, from the larger ones, we can mention YIT, Bonava, KBO. What else? But yeah, then again, let's say it's if you look comparatively at Latvia and Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, we lack sort of these strong big players. If you look at those markets, then those. Bigger scale professional developers, they are more present there. So this, what we are experiencing now is kind of a spillover effect in a sense that in Vilnius and in Tallinn, they've reached some kind of market situation, saturation, and simply the guys are realizing, all right, there's like a jewel in the middle of the Baltics which should be conquered, and that's why you actually now see so much activity in acquiring land plots and sites for potential development by the very same Estonians, Lithuanians predominantly. So
I have partners in Estonia who literally 2 months ago they arrived in Latvia, and first of all, they're buying forests already for 2 or 3 years. That's no new there's no news. But they literally came 2 months ago and were buying apartments left and right because the apartments are the apartment prices are not comparable to the market of Tallinn.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny how they reason is that they consider this market underpriced.
Yeah.
Where we ourselves, like being present here, scratch our heads and think, am I not overpaying at this very moment? But if you look at it from a bigger picture, they see that there is actually huge potential in Riga. And that's just because you take the last decade and you compare what has been developed in Riga, Tallinn, and Vilnius, and Riga is so much behind, like so much, then that is why they come to this very conclusion.
Yeah, and if you take a few steps back to the previous topic about the maxed value of a property, so. Does it happen that when there is big demand for this new project, which has been finished, it's built, and there's a big demand from tenants, does the value exceed the previous valuations, or does it just reach the very top of it and then you try to sell it further?
You know, we live in interesting times, so the market, one thing is the particular property, and then there are things that, you know, happen in the country and generally globally.
Yeah.
So if you come to the value of commercial real estate and institutional investors, then I think what nobody expected was that this affluence of money in the market that we have now. So when let's say the previous years, there was of course money in the market, and it was chasing product, but then again nobody expected that when COVID hit, that basically, you know, the money would become even more, and the opportunities even less. So what it eventually did, it put a pressure on the yields, and we're seeing yield compression all over. You know, when a year back we were discussing with our European colleagues in the practice group, so you know the sentiment was kind of very uncertain what is going to happen, and then again towards the end of the year, and especially, you know, starting from the very beginning of this year, I think everyone just realized that they had lost a year, and then everybody just started rushing for something. And answering your question with what would be now, so I think if you have managed to get to do a successful project, establish a sustainable cash flow, then obviously the situation currently is working for you in the sense that the yields are low. That means the property values are up. So you would actually exceed your expectations.
Okay. And where do biggest real estate investors of our market come from? I believe Scandinavian countries are on the top of the list, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Exactly. That is a very correct explanation. It's mostly Scandinavians and the Baltics. Mm. So we do not have that much presence from Western Europe or Central Eastern Europe, those regions. It's just slowly we're starting to see interest also from there, but they're not, I wouldn't call them major players currently.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously a few years back in Latvia, we had this Russia and Eastern money, but obviously that has pretty much vanished. So now we're pretty much in kind of in a more transparent market, I would say, and, mm-hmm. and you pretty much know what to expect, and you know the players actually.
And from the Colliers network that you're in, is there any interest from colleagues that are outside the borders of the mentioned zone, which are interested in Latvian market, or does it particularly happen that in one country there is only interest from the neighboring countries? For example, in France, that would be Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, Italy, or does it happen then, for example, there are investors from Canada or Australia that are interested in France market or may sometimes be interested in Latin market?
Well,
does the distance play any role?
I think it's not about the distance, really. It's actually about the size and liquidity of the market, mm. which is not helping in our case. So let's say so. We are a market of just under 2 million people, obviously. And if you take that against, for instance, that same Poland, Czech, Romania, even Bulgaria, then. Those are way bigger markets simply by the size, and what it means is you have a higher liquidity, and yeah. just for reasons to diversify risks, obviously there is this sort of the same spillover effect that simply investors are looking for geographies where to safely allocate money and probably to earn a little bit higher yields than they would in the more mature markets. So obviously there is a gap in the yields, and that's what kind of driving the interest towards our market. But at the same time, this is what everyone also working here realizes, is that while we tend to kind of position ourselves as a Baltic market of what, like 6 million people, we are similar, but then again, in aspects, very different, and that tells you that it's yeah, you have to be pretty committed to this very place to actually allocate your focus, and you know the globally. For the globally big players, this is simply not of interest, because we wouldn't have any properties who would raise their interest, simply because the price tag is too low for them, yeah. and the volume.
I just wanted to ask, and you already mentioned it. Do investors sometimes look at the market not just as the country of Latvia or the country of Lithuania, but the Baltic states as one big unit of the allocation of funds? Because if we look at the Baltics themselves, like 6 to 7 million of people, and that's more interesting to them. Because if you take the size of the Baltic states, it's comparable to the same Romania, definitely, even smaller.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. What this is actually what most of our clients are. Of our core clients, those are pan-Baltic clients. Mm. So they look at this market as one, and so they may, take one country by and then the next one. But eventually, of course, if you look from Stockholm or you look from Berlin to this, then eventually the decision would be that you simply try to establish presence in all the countries.
Yeah.
And this is no different to all the other things. I mean, take the retail chains. Well, we didn't have Lidl, now we have. No. Fortunately for us, Lithuanians had it first, we came in second. Mm-hmm. But then again, Estonians also are expecting, and they have said they will go so here. Same story with IKEA. So
yeah.
H&M and take it anywhere, yeah. from the list of big names.
Yeah, and do you think it's even possible that over time these three Baltic countries will unite in one, or is it to
it's a, it's this a, no, no, no. I mean, this is a political question, so I'm not touching on that. But I would surely be happy to see the countries more integrated. So, like I said, the clients we are working with, they usually tell jokes about Latvians, Lithuanians, and Estonians, and then how they differ between themselves. Mm. So in that sense, of course, it would be more beneficial if more or less the environment was sort of more equal, and no. because now there are things where the Lithuanians and the Estonians unfortunately exceed us, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I read in Colliers quarterly report for Baltic States that currently about 20% of A-class offices are vacant in Riga, and compared to Tallinn's 8% and Vilnius 4%, it doesn't look too good. What is your opinion about the market of A-class offices in Riga?
Okay, this is the tricky question. So if you look at the pure number, it may look kind of staggering and suggest that there's something wrong, definitely. But if you look behind that number, you actually see that these are a couple of projects simply that have been built and not yet fully occupied, and mm-hmm. they haven't established themselves.
Yeah, like Z Towers, for example.
Yes, or the Vastin building next to Spice. So in a sense, they in the statistics they go in as with a pretty big number of square meters vacant, but then again if you take that out, the picture is actually not that dramatic anymore. And also kind of a thing to consider is that the volume of new offices currently in construction is about 80,000-85,000 square meters. So yeah. That's coming on into the market next and the following year. So that may suggest, you know, again, there's a wave coming, and are these people crazy? And what we are saying and what we are confident about is not that they are crazy. The point is that if you look at the substance of the Riga market, you know, how much of, you know, professional recently built really high quality buildings do we have here?
Not too much,
and that's the point the companies here have not had the possibility, you know, to enjoy the benefit of working in a productive environment that the modern office building provides you. And here we may come back to the question: will offices remain, you know, or something like that? Those kind of global philosophical questions. But we also have an answer to that, and the answer is that companies are not abandoning offices, so the office is just taking on another function. And from that point of view, I'd say it will be interesting years, a couple of years ahead, when these new developments come into market, how they will compete for the occupier. But then again, I think it will be also a kind of a wave that the word will spread. So once you kind of once the companies as tenants, they will move in, they will actually realize what benefits it brings, you know, then this simply will be passed on to the market, and so this mindset will actually start to change, and then simply it looks as a quite big amount to be filled in, but then again I'd say it the market will simply transform. So what the the most the least less successful or let's say not so well placed or in terms of quality not that good buildings will have to think about how they can change. They will they might remain empty for a time, but then again it will require some investment, and I do believe they will find another tenant, because also an interesting thing to see is that if we speak generally simply about the offices, is that you cannot from a company management perspective, you know, this benefit that a quality office brings you can't measure it directly in Excel.
No.
But what you can for you, the office cost is just a line, and the dumbest thing to do is, you know, to try to be aggressive on that line and cut it. Because what you're sacrificing is probably your employees' well-being and their productivity subsequently. So instead of you put another 100 euros a month for the employee that you dedicate for his workplace, and that will, you know, boost his productivity much more, his loyalty, your brand as an employer much better, and that will way far, you know, exceed the 100 euros you spent actually compared to what you are paying him in the salary.
Well, that's a very great way of looking at it. And if we take into consideration those 80,000 square meters that are coming in the following years, is there still a room for development in this niche, or do we have to meet the current market supply first before thinking about some other development projects?
The things, you know, the way I see, it will not be so that vacancy is absorbed and then simply we start, we take to the construction site and start building new. So what will be most likely the reality that new developments will keep coming. Hopefully they will. If not, for the current moment, I think the biggest concern is the huge rise in construction prices, because that for the moment is like the deal breaker in many cases. So and these costs you cannot really pass on to the occupiers. Let's keep fingers crossed that let's say this hike that has that we are experiencing now is not something permanent, and if that calms down a little bit, then I think things should return to normal. There should be a normal business environment, and simply we should see this healthy kind of healthy amount of development. So to answer your question, is there room? Well, obviously there is, because simply look at our neighbors. How much they've built over the years. Have they managed to lease it up successfully? They have. So this is the same about Resi as well. So it's simply a matter of, you know, managing this amount of new supply. Not to end up in a situation where the market chokes up itself, you know, with the amount. So as long as the developments and the additional this additional new stock is coming into reasonable amounts into the market, I think it's all fine.
Yeah. Some of my previous guests have said that we're at least 5 to 6 years behind the neighbor markets. What is your guess?
Absolutely. This is absolutely the case.
Yeah. Okay. And what do you think is the reason we're behind neighbors in retail and industrial markets as well, in the terms of occupancy, for example?
Again, I'd say this is... the situation, if you look at purely the vacancy number, it may look dramatic, but then again, if you look at the substance of it, it's again simply the case where there is the market size, and maybe this vacancy is not maybe, but it is caused by simply the less successful projects. And again, like if it wasn't the case, we wouldn't be seeing new developments coming in. All right, it's not that much about retail, where I think we won't see that much activity going forward. So in that sense, we're saturated for a bit now, I think. But in industrial segment, there's quite a big chunk again coming in. And why they are coming in? Because they see opportunity that the tenants who occupy the current premises, they will simply require, demand better quality products in the future, and that is where the new developers see their potential.
Yeah, especially with this e-commerce uprise, I think in logistics sector there's a large opportunity for developers still, because from what I know from like the developers like Picha, who are building these logistics centers on Riga Airport, like they are almost immediately occupied.
Absolutely, this is the kind of perfect formula. You built a decent quality building that matches the demand. The location is right, and there it goes.
So. BTA, Baltic Insurance Company, together with construction company YIT, has recently announced an investment deal for the construction of 5 rent houses, 2 in Riga, 2 in Vilnius, and 1 in Tallinn. Project is planned to be completed until 2023. And also, 7 months ago, the same insurance company, BTA, acquired multi-family residential project in Riga with 7 residential buildings and more than 170 tenanted units. Why is there such an activity taking in place around the rent houses? Do you see an imbalanced demand in this sector?
Well, what we're seeing here is, I think, this focus on resi is very much accelerated by the pandemic. So when that hit, what the investors realized was that this flow of income is actually less volatile. So if you have a rental cash flow of a resi portfolio, then people have to live. They might they might temporarily switch jobs, and there might be some kind of those things, but then again they have to live somewhere, and so this cash flow is more predictable, and this focus on resi also came from, I would say, from the more mature markets. This is the tendency that we are simply experiencing here, and I think also there is obviously a huge opportunity in this market, because as we know, the new generation, which probably you also represent, it's not about for them, it's not that much about owning than experience. Mm-hmm. And so they will focus, and they are actually focusing on other things in life. So and the rental so if you go for rent rather than owning, it brings also some benefits to you as a person, as a household. Actually, if you look from a wider kind of macro perspective, mm-hmm. In that sense, the issue in Latvia, I would say, is that. If again you start look into statistics, we have one of the highest percentages of households owning their residence. I think the number was around 85%, Whereas in Western Europe, also Scandinavia, the number is more like towards 50%.
Yeah, in Germany, I think it was like 40 or something.
40-50%, yeah. And then again, you know, put into perspective the GDP per capita.
Yeah.
And there's a pretty good correlation of that. Mm-hmm. And if you start thinking about why that is so, the answer probably in part lies because if the households, if there's more households renting there, then they, as labor force, they are more mobile.
Yeah,
meaning sure. That you know, they will most definitely adjust to the labor market, take on better opportunities in their careers rather than sticking, you know, to their own home. And so in that sense, I think we have much room to grow here because the rental market here is really so small, while actually demand should be there. And I think obviously we'll not turn all these owners into renters or something, you know, but I think we should kind of switch the thinking that probably it's not actually a bad idea to rent, because that will simply turn your attention, you know, or if you'll be able to turn your focus, you know, on other things in life. Simply.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about the young generation or my generation that there is a large demand for rental units because, for example, one of my clients is a property manager and I am leasing his apartments in his rent houses. And the vast majority of the new tenants are in the range of 20 to 30 years of age, and they have like studio apartments, two bedroom apartments, three bedroom apartments, and 80-90% is like in the gap of 20 to 30.
Absolutely, and this is the and speaking of myself, for instance, I'm a father of three. We are a family, and actually we also decided to rent just because that felt and is a good opportunity at this very moment. If we're looking at it, you know, in a perspective of 3-4 years, then weighing the alternatives that we had, we decided that why not try it. And now that I've been a year in a rental apartment, I see the very things that I was telling you, that you seem to waste your time less on things which kind of would be nice rather than on what are essential, you know.
No.
So you free up time. I mean, in my case, for instance, it the most important thing rather than saying that I own my apartment was that I live, you know, 200 meters away from my daughter's school. She can walk to school. My middle son, he's basically another 300 meters through the park, his kindergarten. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm seven minutes from the office. And yeah. And the huge time savings that we as a family, you know, get from this, I mean, they certainly outweigh, you know, the costs. And then again, if you take it a step further, you know, it's what people claim, you know, that you're simply wasting this money. But what is our case, you know? We have an owned apartment that we lease. We simply grew out of it, yeah. and we leased it. And so effectively, my cost, you know, of the housing is not that much. The whole sum that I'm paying in rent is mm-hmm. just the part that I'm paying extra, you know, over my previous previous owned apartment. So yeah. and on my personal balance sheet, you know, I do hold an asset, and I do invest in it basically, so it is earning me income, and and I'm growing my wealth from that. And I think this is something that young people and also older ones, anyone, you know, they can consider that, meaning that it's not, it's you have to invest. Real estate is basically a good investment at the end of the day. Yeah. If you know and are lucky to manage it successfully, and I think it's an opportunity overall.
Yeah, I know a very similar example where the owner of an apartment, he also outgrew the apartment, it became too small, and he leased it out and moved to a rental apartment just closer to his workplace. And of course, as you mentioned, the mobility is totally different, because if like a year or 2 years from now you decide that you want to work in another city, another country, or another side of the city, then it's
you just pick easier. up your pick up your things in the worst case scenario, you kind of have a termination mm-hmm. I don't know, fee to pay to the landlord, and that's it basically. But generally you are wasting less of your actually money and your focus and time on things that probably you don't really need to. I mean, you know. Mm-hmm.
And how do you see your own career evolving over the next 5 years? Are you considering any new challenges?
Well, every day is a challenge. I'm happy to be living in this place, to have these opportunities that are around. It's a very interesting time we are living in. The industry we are working is changing very much, and there will be many changes ahead. So I'm very happy to be part of it and seeing it and yeah, having my hands on it also in a way.
Great. And where can people find you?
Where they can find me? Obviously on LinkedIn and on Colliers webpage.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate this conversation, Jani. Thank you for sharing your time with me and Baltic Landlords. Thank you.
Thank you.